Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We come to you online every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Like every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Albader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Oh, Carlos, it's heating up. I tell you what, it's cold outside. I'm going to single digits here tonight in Toledo, Ohio. With the wind chill, it's down about zero, but the golf news world is heating up, Carlos. We got some juicy stuff tonight. Tiger Woods is starting a media feud with Hall of Famer Dan Jenkins. LPGA's got an announcement about the Kraft Nabisco going out. I'm excited. We got a lot to cover. Let's go, Carlos.
We have a lot to cover, and we also have a VIG, a very important guest of the week. And very appropriately, we have Craig Kinn, the LPGA's chief communications officer. He's going to be with us. We have an interview we already taped, but he's going to be a great interview. You have to listen to it. Always a great interview. Fred, let's start right away. So you have a lot of things to talk about, so let's go. Tee it up.
I do, Carlos. This afternoon, just a little while ago, I picked up a story that Tiger Woods has gone on to a website that Derek Jeter promotes called the Players Tribune, where professional athletes can have a blog or kind of reply to shots or articles that are taken at famous athletes. And so Tiger is becoming a budding writer, evidently, and he filed a response on Derek Jeter's website about Dan Jenkins' article in Golf Digest, and the title of the article is My Fake, in parenthesis, Interview with Tiger. Jenkins even has a person sitting at a diner, in a booth like in a diner, taking a selfie dressed like Tiger, and he takes some pretty good shots at Tiger, but really nothing too, you know, notorious, but it looks to me like, Carlos, that Tiger has kind of committed the cardinal sin here. You just don't get in a fight in the media, especially with an 85-year-old Hall of Fame journalist who's done it all, seen it all, grew up with Hogan and Nelson, and, you know, in this game, the Tiger, in this fight, you know, Jenkins is the plus six, and Tiger's the hack. There's no way he's going to win this thing. This is going to be bloody for Woods. This really makes him look very, very bad.
Oh, Fred, no. You really don't get it. You know, even for those of us who are embarrassed to admit it, celebrity culture is alluring. You know, and it's a big business. Movie and television stars, sports figures, musical icons, and business tycoons all want to capture our attention and our money, you know, and they do that through media attention. That's just media play from him. Even if he doesn't do that, he'll become irrelevant soon, Fred.
Well, I don't know. It looks pretty stupid to me, Carlos. I know there's no such thing as bad publicity, but for one, Golf Digest loves it. It's probably selling a lot of magazines for them. You know, they can use the boost for sure. You know, pictures of Paulina only go so far on the cover. So, hey, another story that just popped up this afternoon, and we're going to talk about it later, but when we talked to Craig Kane early, he said he had a big story coming out this afternoon he couldn't talk about. The LPGA announced this afternoon that they have a new sponsor for the old Kraft Nabisco. As you know, this year, 2014, was the last year for the Kraft Nabisco to host that tournament at Mission Hills, which is a major. It's the first major of the year on any tour. and it's held in March. And so all Nippon Airlines, the Japanese airlines, the largest airlines in Japan, has picked up full sponsorship. They're keeping the tournament at Mission Hills for the foreseeable future, and they're excited about continuing the tradition and history of that event. So that is really good news, Carlos. So I'm going to go right on in. Now we can start kind of with the Par 5 news, and I'm going to go right on in with that. And our first story, we've got some great news items to cover tonight, Carlos. With the two breaking news items, I'm so excited. But, you know, we're going to talk here a little bit about Christina Kim winning the Lorena Ochoa Invitational. And as we're going to talk to Craig Kann, you know, it's just been such a great year on the LPGA Tour. You know, veterans winning, the battle between Stacy and Enbi Park, Michelle Wee winning a major, Lexi winning a major, Lydia Ko winning a couple times in the Rookie of the Year. I mean, it's just been a phenomenal season, one of the best in LPGA Tour history. But maybe one of the best stories of anything is Christina Kim coming back from a mental illness, depression, severe depression. She even considered suicide and has come back to win the Lorena Ochoa Invitational last week just outside of Mexico City. Kim turned professional in 2002 after a successful amateur career. Her first professional win came at the 2002 Garden State Futures Summer Classic in a playoff over another budding young professional. Guess who? Lorena Ochoa. Both Ochoa and Kim earned full LPGA Tour cards for 2003 and have been close friends ever since. The Lorena Ochoa Invitational is Kim's third LPGA Tour win and her first since 2005. Even though Kim is flamboyant in her dress and personality, she has struggled with severe depression and was close to committing suicide. Her return to competitive golf and to succeed against the best women golfers in the world is a story worthy of major headlines. The life of a professional golfer is not an easy one. To the casual golf fan, the television coverage, international travel, and big checks seem like a dream occupation. The reality is constant travel, lost luggage, bad food, loneliness, and fatigue. Only the top players are making serious money, and the rest are constantly searching for the magic formula to reach the top of the leaderboard and find deep pocket sponsors to pay the tab. That constant struggle can mentally defeat even the strongest. Christina Kim has been to the edge of the cliff and come back more determined and ready to succeed. She was only one of few players to enter all six of the Asian Swing tournaments, with her best finish being a T23 in China at the Blue Bay LPGA Classic. The $200,000 first-place check she earned for winning the Lorena Ochoa Invitational gets her to $555,000 for the year. She moves to number 23 on the race to the CME Globe and assures her spot on the LPGA Tour for 2015. There were 35 other women in the field this last week in Mexico, Carlos, but the biggest story by far is the return of Christina Kim to the winner's circle.
That is one of the most inspiring stories and really one of those many great stories that we talked about with Craig Kann. So I'm not going to blow it up before that the interview, but it's a great season that they had and a great product, and Christina Kim is just one more that really puts it over the top there for the LPGA. Hey, Fred, you know what? We have to keep talking about the Ryder Cup. We have to keep it on the
Ryder Cup. We're still talking about the Ryder Cup?
I insist. We have to.
Every week. We're just going to have an automatic spot for the Ryder Cup like every week, aren't we?
I'm going to try to find one. You know, especially since the PGA of America's Ryder Cup Task Force has yet to have a single meeting. We have to talk about it. You know, but not to be denied, according to the Golf Channel website, a spokesman for the PGA confirmed that leaders from the association recently met with the 2008 U.S. Ryder Cup captain, Paul Azinger, to discuss various topics concerning future matches. As you might remember, Azinger was asked last month to serve on the 11-member task force, which is scheduled to meet next month in Orlando, Florida, but declined, at least for now. Although the spokesman declined to give any details about the meeting, his first familiar with the session acknowledged officials met with Azinger last week at the PGA's South Florida headquarters for about an hour. You know, that sounds to me like a very short meeting. You know, Fred, you would take an hour just to say, hi, how are you, how's everything being? So an hour is just not enough. The source characterized the meeting as a chance for Azinger and the PGA to get reacquainted, and that few specifics were discussed. That's why it was only an hour. That source also said that the meeting went really well and that Azinger and officials from the PGA plan to meet again in December. Well, you know what? Maybe they'll do it during the task force meeting in Orlando, which will be held during the Hero Challenge at Isleworth. You know, that task force that is co-chaired by PGA Vice President Derek Sprague and PGA Chief Executive Officer Pete Bevacqua will examine the entire Ryder Cup process, including of the U.S. Red Cup captains, the systems, the point systems, dates by which the team is determined, dates of the captain selections, and the selection of the vice captains. Everything. And then, you know, the Sprague and Bevacqua, the members of the Ryder Cup task force, are past captains Raymond Floyd, Tom Lehman, and Davis Love III, past Ryder Cup team members Ricky Fowler, Jim Furyk, Phil Mickelson, Steve Stricker, and Tiger Woods, and the PGA Secretary Paul Levy of Indian Wells, California. But I don't know why Azinger didn't want it to have front seat on this group. I still strongly believe they should do a pay-per-view event of this meeting. Forget the Hero Challenge tournament. It doesn't matter at all. Let's just see prime time how Tiger and Lefty will be agreeing to disagreeing for it.
You suppose they're going to be sitting like side by side or, you know, across the table or at either end or, you know, the dynamics of where you sit and how, I mean, that's got to be great stuff.
You know what else would be good to know? Who will enter last, like in boxing? You know, champion is the one that enters last.
Tiger would have Steiny standing out in the hallway, you know, and Steiny would have to give Tiger a cue when it's okay to come in because Phil's already seated. Is that the deal? Oh, that's great. Hey, Carlos, on a little more serious note, one of the really cool things that happened this week is that the announcement that Charles Sifford will be the third golfer to ever receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom when President Obama drapes it around his neck in a ceremony November 24th in Washington, D.C. The only other professional golfers to be so honored with this prestigious award were Arnold Palmer in 2004 and Jack Nicklaus in 2005. That's pretty good company. Sifford could not have imagined receiving the nation's highest civilian honor as a young black man trying to eke out a living as a professional golfer. Born in 1922, he was raised in Charlotte, North Carolina, and his love affair with golf began at an early age. He grew up learning golf, like so many successful players, as a caddy, and was a scratch golfer by the age of 13. Golf is a difficult game to master, as we both know, and being a young black man in the Jim Crow South made it even more challenging. He received death threats and was constantly harassed, even after public integration. In the early days, African Americans were banned from PGA of America events, and Sifford played in tournaments organized for black players only. He first attempted to qualify for a PGA of America tournament in the 1952 Phoenix Open, when former heavyweight boxing champion Joe Louis had obtained an invitation for Sifford to compete. He was subject to threats of physical violence and racial abuse throughout his career, and sought advice and counsel from Jackie Robinson, who had broken Major League Baseball's color barrier in 1947. He became a PGA member in 1961 and won two official PGA tournaments in his career, the 1967 Greater Hartford Invitational and the 1969 LA Open. He also won the 1957 Long Beach Open, which was a co-sponsored event by the PGA, but is considered an unofficial win today. Sifford won the 1975 Senior PGA Championship at the age of 53, when it was the only official tournament for professionals over the age of 50, prior to the advent of that little thing they call the Champions Tour today. He was inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame in 2004 and chose Gary Player to present him. St. Andrews University bestowed him with an honorary Doctorate of Laws degree in 2006, and in 2007, the Golf Course Superintendents of America recognized him with their highest honor, the Old Tom Morris Award. Tiger Woods has often referred to the sacrifices made by Sifford and the early pioneers that were forced to suffer the indignities of racial abuse to allow him the freedom of competing on the PGA Tour today. Charles Sifford opened the door for African-American golfers to get through the country club gate and earn a living on the golf course. This is really a really good thing. I'm not an Obama fan, but this is really one of the best things that I've seen him do while he's in office. So really applaud this.
I have to second that. He's very deserving of that special honor. So congratulations to Dr. Charles Sifford on this great honor. You know, anything that has to have your name just beside Arnie and the Golden Rear, you know, that's awesome. So congratulations to him. Hey, Fred, you know, the Adidas AG third quarter earnings, they were hit by double-digit sales declines at TaylorMade Adidas Golf. It was 33% down from a year ago. Since then, the company announced that it's making strategic changes at the business to align shipping and product launch cycles with market demand patterns. Well, last Thursday, TaylorMade officially launched its 2015 product line, showcasing its new R15 and AeroBurner drivers, two different drivers at the same time, fairways and rescues, and the RSI Iron Series. Since Adidas acquired TaylorMade in 2005, it has since endorsed five of the top 20 golfers in world rankings, most notably Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Sergio Garcia, Justin Rose, and Martin Kaymer. And they certainly right now need all the help they can get from them to help revamp the sales of the company that Gary Adams founded in 1979. On hand during the unveiling were actor John McGinley. Now, stop thinking about the Ryder Cup. I'm not talking about that. It's not about the European Ryder Cup winning captain, Paul McGinley. It's the actor, John McGinley, better known for his Perry Cox character in Scrubs. And also there was Jason Day, the Australian golfer, who has been with the company, I guess, since he has memory, and expressed there how he feels about TaylorMade when he called them as being like family to him, and that he was there for the long run with them. There's some good support for the company that was preaching that their new product line was all about speed, forgiveness, and distance. Maybe that's what one of their touring pros, Dustin Johnson, is preaching as well. You know, speedy forgiveness while maintaining your distance from him at the same time. Well, Chief Executive Officer of TaylorMade, Ben Sharp, said that officials haven't had any contact with DJ since their top American endorser took an indefinite leave of absence from the USPGA Tour in August for undisclosed personal reasons. He has also declined to say whether there have been internal discussions about ending TaylorMade's partnership with Johnson that runs through 2015. Johnson is 16 right now in the official world of ranking, and he's all eight wins in the PGA Tour have come using TaylorMade clubs and balls while wearing Adidas apparel. Well, Golf Channel's Tim Rutherford reported yesterday that Johnson is eyeing a potential return to the PGA Tour at the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines in February. Johnson's fiancée, Paulina Gretzky, is pregnant with the couple's first child and due to give birth in January. With regard to a specific date, Johnson's agent, David Winkle, said nothing is definitive and that is all baby-dependent. I don't know, Fred. He has a lawsuit pending, could lose his clubs and apparent sponsor, and now announcing that he might return in February, which is 6 months after he announced his leave, it makes the conspiracy theorists think that that six-month drug suspension that Golf.com reported is true. I don't feel bad for him. At least he has Paulina and the baby to support him. So at the end of the day, family is what comes first and really matters. So, hey, he has his doom there. But
I thought DJ retired. I didn't even know he was still playing. We hadn't heard anything out of him. So.
Not neither, hey. Neither has the CEO from Taylor Made.
I hope they're still sending him checks. we've got another really good story tonight. You know, women are just becoming a bigger and bigger factor in the golf world, as if they weren't already. But women membership was just voted into the RNA in Scotland. And we're going to hear from Craig Cann here a little bit, the LPGA Tour is growing stronger every day. And you remember last year, Carlos, we did a story about Augusta National Golf Club adding two women members for the first time, Condoleezza Rice and Darla Moore were added, the first two female members of Augusta National. Well, friend of the show, Ron Green Jr., reported in Global Golf Post that the home of the Masters has added a third female member to its confines. Virginia Ginny Rometty is the first woman to hold both the chairwoman of the board and CEO at IBM. She will become a member of Augusta National. Mrs. Rometty was appointed the president and CEO in January 1 of 2000. She became chairwoman of the board later the same year. She has held a host of positions within IBM, including senior vice president of sales, marketing, and strategy, in which she is credited with a rapid expansion of the company into emerging economies of the world. She's a graduate of Northwestern University, which is part of the Big Ten, Carlos, just in case you didn't know, and serves on the Council on Foreign Relations, the Board of Trustees for Northwestern. She's also on the Board of Overseers and the Board of Managers of Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Her corporate connections and strong international business background make her an excellent addition to the elite membership at one of the most exclusive golf clubs in the world. As IBM is one of the three major sponsors of the Masters each year, it is customary for Augusta National to offer a membership to the chairman and CEO. It was rumored last year when Rice and Moore were extended memberships that Rometty would receive one also. Evidently, Augusta National Chairman Billy Payne can finally check that little item off his to-do list. Big news for Augusta National, Carlos.
And they keep coming. Hey, they need more there. Hopefully, they'll just keep coming for them. Hey, one more news item here in the Par 5 news, which is a bogey today because we're playing at Par 6. The 1999 Open Champion, Paul Warry, is set to host a new match play event in his native Scotland for the next 3 years. The 64-man Saltire Energy Paul Warry match play, carrying a prize fund of 1 million euros, will make its debut on the calendar at Mercer Links Golf Club, just on the outskirts of Laurie's native Aberdeen. It's going to be from July 30 through August 2nd next year, and will be part of the Race to Dubai for the next 3 years. It will pit 64 of the leading players on the Race to Dubai against each other in a straight knockout match play contest. At a time when longtime sponsors, the likes of Volvo, for instance, are either cutting back or withdrawing altogether from supporting golf tournaments at the highest level, the onus is starting to fall more on players themselves to give something back to the sport. Paul Warry has been a stalwart on the European Tour over the past 23 years. He's a two-time Ryder Cup player and Scotland's most recent majors champion. He will be the tournament host with his management company, Four Sports and Entertainment, promoting the event and Saltire Energy, one of his own sponsors, as the title sponsor. The Paul Warry Saltire Energy match play is the result of him coming up with a great idea, getting one of his backers, a company incidentally that currently has its name emblazoned on the Aberdeen FC shirts, on board and showing real ambition by changing from the original idea of it being a challenge tour event to one of the main tour, European tour. You know what, Fred? This event is a true testament to Paul Warry's commitment towards the development of golf. That wraps up our Par 5 news for the day. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have our VIP, Craig Kahn. He's with us. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIP, very important guest of the week. You know, the LPGA Tour is wrapping up its season this weekend. The race to the CME Globe, the CME Group Tour Championship events are right now this weekend, Fred. So who better than Craig Kahn to bring an interview this week about the LPGA? So set up this interview for us.
Yeah, Craig was kind enough to join us again today and talk a little bit about the tournament coming up this week, some of the bigger stories from the year, and a couple questions about next year. So he couldn't answer one of the questions, and that we covered earlier in the segment tonight about the Kraft Nabisco having the new sponsor. So that's really a good thing. But the LPGA Tour is really on a growth curve, one of the best seasons in memory, and they've just got a glowing future looking ahead. So, yeah, Craig had some really good points to make, and we had a great discussion with him today.
We are happy to be here with Craig Kahn today. And, Carlos, you want to do the intro and bring him in, please?
Yes, we're here. So happy to have Craig Kahn, the Chief Communications Officer for the LPGA, here in the Backline Report again. It's always a great interview. Hey, Craig, the LPGA Tour is wrapping up its schedule this week with the CME Group Tour Championship. And when you look back through the 2014 season, what a phenomenal year for the LPGA. Michelle Wee, breakthrough year, she wins a major. Lexi Thompson, she also wins one. In Bay Park, she wins her fourth major in seven major starts. There were also first-time major winners. One is a veteran, Mo Martin. The other one, a teenager, Kim Hyo-Yu. Lydia Ko, she delivers in her first full year as a pro. She's number three in the world. Great story with Christina Kim. Wow, a lot of things. Veterans like Inbe and Stacy show the way battling for number one. Teenagers winning also show the great future ahead of us. Craig, how can you top that in 2015?
I don't know that I can. I also know that I think I need to hire you. I mean, you've got more information off the top of your head than I can come up with, and I run communications and media. So that's a good job. That's a good job out of you. You need to come on the road with me and make a couple of speeches in front of people because you recite it pretty well. I think it's been a dream season, but we don't write scripts. We can't do that at the beginning of the year. You can only hope that everybody that's at the top of the Rolex World Rankings plays their best golf. You hope for great moments. You hope for great stars to come through in the clutch. You hope for great TV, all that sort of stuff. And I think we've kind of had that this year. You know, it's interesting because you rattled off a bunch of really neat statistics, but I think this is impressive. 11 of the top 12 in the Rolex World Rankings have won on tour this year. And that's difficult to accomplish on any tour, whether it's the PGA Tour or the European Tour. The best of the best don't always play well. And for us to have that, that's really good for us. We've had seven different countries represented in the winner's circle this year, which speaks to the globalness of our tour. That's awesome. You mentioned some of the first-time winners. We got eight Rolex first-time winners. Christina Kim just won in Mexico, which is really good for the tour. She's a wonderful ambassador for us. But I think the cool thing, too, is that we come down to the CME Group Tour Championship with the top three players in the world playing the best golf and at the top of the race to the CME Globe. To have Stacey Lewis number one, Indy Park number two, and Lydia Ko number three with, oh, by the way, Michelle Wee fourth, that's pretty good. That says a lot. And we are very fortunate to be where we are right now on this tour.
Craig, we are really looking forward to this weekend with the CME Group Tour Championship. As you mentioned, the top three, Indy Park, Stacey Lewis, and Lydia Ko, control their own fate to win the $1 million bonus. But there are nine players that really have a chance if those three kind of slip down. That has to look pretty good to you.
It does look great. As you mentioned, only three truly control their own destiny. If Stacey Inby or Lydia wins, they're going to win $1 million, which, by the way, we've got in a glass case standing outside for everybody to see this week. All those bills are rolled up, and we'll have an armed guard standing next to it. So that's a pretty cool thing from a visual standpoint this week. But, yeah, the best of the best. I mean, that's what you hope for. That's what you dream for. There are nine players that can get it done this week. They need a little help. I was talking to Athahara Munoz yesterday, and she's 10th on that list, and she was feeling pretty bad about not having that opportunity. But Michelle Wee, So-Yun Yu, Chen-Shen Feng, Anna Nordqvist, Chella Choi, and Kari Webb are all in the top nine with the other three players that you mentioned, and they've all got a chance this week. I mean, you win and take care of business, you've got that opportunity for $1 million, and we've been playing for it all year. It ties each and every one of the 32 events that we have on our schedule together. It feels like a PGA Tour type thing for the first time in a long time on the LPGA Tour, where they've got something tangible that's hanging out there for them from you know, the first time they tee it up in January all the way to the end of the season. You know, that's a big bonus. $1 million spends really well around the holiday season, and I know these players are chasing it hard.
Yeah, you mentioned one thing there in your comment there, 32 official events plus the International Crown plus 20 events on the Sumatra Tour. Is that going to put a strain on enough players to fill the fields? I know we saw a couple fields during the summer that had a little problem filling out the field. They're bringing in college and amateur players to kind of round out the field. Is there any thoughts about increasing the number of cards coming off the Sumatra Tour or maybe reducing fields a little bit going forward?
Well, you know, it's a good question. Have we had a couple of shorter fields? Yes. The amateurs and the, you know, maybe the college players you're speaking of are calculated. Those opportunities, be it at the North Texas Shootout in Irving, you know, that's a calculated move. We try to have some of those players have opportunities or a few other events like that as well. Are there some events that are a bit shorter? Sure. We don't want to take the Sumatra Tour down a notch. We're trying to grow that tour and give them more playing opportunities to make sure that the graduates, the 10 players that get a card, have played a full season. You know, you don't want 12 events out there. You want 25 if you can, and you want to try to emulate everything that goes on the LPGA Tour. You want them to play for more money. You want them to play at better golf courses. You want them to be challenged. And if they're kind of going back and forth, that doesn't really do them any good. However, having said that, there are a few events where we actually did bring some Sumatra Tour players to help fill out those fields and push them into it and said, hey, you ought to come play this week because you're going to get some great experience. I remember Portland being one of those events where Marissa Steen came and played and a couple of others. So that's good. They should test themselves against the best players. That helps them for their career to get ready when they come out on the LPGA. Having said all that, we're not looking to add more tournaments to the LPGA Tour schedule. I don't think a 46 or 48-week tournament schedule or a wraparound like the PGA Tour works for the LPGA. We like three tournaments on, one off, four on, one off. We like the players to be able to have an off season and come back fresh. That's just the way we do it. We don't want people to be talking about who's not playing. And for the most part, you're going to get the best players on the LPGA competing each and every week. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any more than a handful, a couple of weeks, where you might not have had eight of the top 10 players on the money list competing that week. And we're really proud of that. I mean, Lydia Ko, Suzanne Pedersen, Stacey Lewis, they play a lot of golf out here. So we don't have media talking about who's not there. We have them talking about who is there, and that's the big goal for us. So would we consider taking the fields down a notch? Yeah, we've talked about that in some board meetings, to be truthful and transparent with you. We have discussed that. But at the same time, the LPGA is about opportunities. We want to allow the next stars and the next generation to play golf. We want to get them out there. And if you still got eight of the top 10 on the money list or nine out of the top 10 and you're filling with an amateur here or a couple of Sumatra Tour players that have an opportunity, I think that's a good thing.
You know, as you know, Carlos and I both follow the LPGA Tour very closely, and it looks to me like you've got some great young girls coming. There are great women in the collegiate ranks today, but it's going to take another 3, 4, 5 years to get that influx of talent to where you're going to have. I mean, the fields are deep now. They're so much deeper now than they were in the past. But with the girls and the women that are coming, and also the ladies that want to get here from the Ladies European Tour and from Asia and Australia, it just looks like, you know, you're going to have a boom you know, in talent over the next 3 to 5 years, but maybe some of that just is not quite ready yet for the LPGA Tour.
Yeah, we're going to start needing to hire transportation to drive our players around because they can't rent cars out here. That's for sure. It's an interesting thing, you know, going into Mexico last week, every winner on our tour but three had been under the age of 30. Honestly, I don't have the birthday of Christina Kim sitting in front of me, so I couldn't tell you if she's 30 or not. I guess I should probably know that. But, you know, it's definitely a trend. There's great players. There's great talent. And I'm not just talking women's golf. It's in the game. And I think we're all trying to do things to grow the game and take it to the next level. I always like to bring up our LPGA, USGA girls golf program where 4 years ago we had 10,000 girls that were initiated into the game or given the experience to kind of learn the game for the first time in a year, 10,000. Well, this year we just celebrated our 30,000th girl in one calendar year. And we hope to have 40,000 next year. 50,000 by 15 was our goal at the end of the year. So we'll see if we can get there. I feel like we're going to. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do. We want to give more young girls the opportunity to play. The Golf Channel is going to give more exposure, as you guys probably know, to the collegiate women's game. They televise the men. Next up comes the women. And they'll be carrying that forward. I think that's a positive for us. We'll actually probably send some LPGA staffers out there to meet some of those young girls and help mentor them along. I will tell you this, be it the Symmetra Tour or any level below the LPGA, we spend a lot of time in professional development and a lot of time in making sure that those young girls are ready to take on every role that comes with being an LPGA Tour player, because it's not just about the name on the bag, it's everything that goes with it. It's the autographs, it's the partners or the sponsors or the fans and shaking hands and learning how to be a true professional. And I'll leave you with this. Lydia Ko and I played in the Pro-Am together at the Bahamas. That was our first event of the year this year. When I got done with that event, you know, she made a big thank you and said how much she enjoyed the day, which I thought was impressive, but she has to say that to me. What I got about a week later was a handwritten letter of how much she appreciated playing in the Pro-Am with the people that we all played with, and I was having shoulder surgery in March, and she said good luck with the surgery. Now, I see Lydia every week, but to get it, you know, she could have easily come up and just said that to me, but instead she wrote the handwritten note. I think these girls get it. I think they love being a part of our tour, and I think they like being a part of the momentum that we're facing right now.
You know, the international crown this summer, Spain winning that over the stronger maybe U.S. and Korean teams, that turned out to be a big hit, big success.
Yep.
Looks like that's going to be really big for you going forward.
It's going to be huge. As you guys probably know, just a few weeks back in Korea, we had a big press conference announcing UL as our new partner for that event moving forward. Rich Harvest Farms is the next venue in 2016. Jerry Rich from Rich Harvest Farms is actually here this week at CME Group Tour Championship. I've said hello to him. He's very excited. That's where the Solheim Cup was back in 2009, and that's going to be a wonderful event. And then we'll head overseas into Asia for 2018 in Korea, site yet to be determined. But that event was one of the neatest things that I've ever experienced in my time covering golf, be it at the Golf Channel or now being a part of the LPGA. It really felt special. The players really embraced the opportunity. It meant something to be one of the four that got to represent their country. For them to stand on the tee was just amazing with the anthems and the pageantry and the competition. To have Spain win it, I thought was actually a really good thing. You know, I mean, Korea and the United States battling in a playoff to get there Sunday. Would it have been great to have the Americans? Sure. But it was a phenomenal week, and we got to meet a lot of new players, 32 players competing, and that's that speaks volumes about where we are as a tour globally.
I know your main task is, and one of your main tasks, of course, is communication for the LPGA Tour, and part of that involves social media use by the players to promote in themselves, their own brand, as well as the tour. And, you know, you are an expert. You're one of the leading experts in the nation on this stuff. And you know, what was your take on the Ted Bishop fiasco, and how do you try to avoid something like that happening on the LPGA Tour?
Yeah, that's a good question. Obviously, the PGA of America is a partner of the LPGA. We have our new KPMG Women's PGA Championship. I was actually just up there in Westchester a couple of weeks ago or last week for a site survey because I'm really excited about that. And, you know, social media is a dangerous thing. I mean, let's call that for what it is. I watch every word that goes out. You know, it's kind of like writing a letter to somebody that makes you feel better and then you toss it in the trash, you know. you got to be careful about what you speak about in today's world, because everybody is proven guilty before anything else. They're guilty, and you got to prove innocence, and that's kind of an unfortunate thing. Missteps are out there. I know we spend a lot of time at the LPGA preparing not only our players but executives, all of us, for things that can possibly happen. You know, media training or media coaching is something that's valuable, but at the same time, I don't like people going out there telling people that they've been media trained or media coached, because I don't want anybody, myself or Mike Wan or anybody, to be looked at as though things coming out of their mouth are calculated. Do I know what my message is when I'm speaking to you guys or the things that I want to get out? Absolutely, I do. You know, I spend a lot of time on that stuff, and that's what we do. But at the same time, we've got to have a conversation, and we've got to be able to have opinion, but you do have to watch what you say, and you have to watch how you say it, because we just live in a society today that is very much focused on people's missteps and not their successes. At the end of the day, if I stayed at the LPGA for 10 years and I walked out the door, I'll probably be remembered more if I have a misstep for that thing than I would be for any of the positive things that were associated with my tenure. And that's very unfortunate. And that's kind of what's happened to Ted. He did a lot of great things for the PGA of America. I mean, a lot of great things. He was a wonderful, you know, cheerleader and ambassador for the game. And he did use his platform to trumpet a lot of the successes of the PGA of America. But when you make a mistake like that in today's world, which is a jump-on-you society in the media, you will pay a price. And that's very unfortunate. So we aren't perfect. We do plan and we do try to make sure we're on top of stuff. But, you know, I wasn't about to jump in from an LPGA perspective and start beating down Ted Bishop for his commentary. That was none of my business and not something that I felt like I needed to weigh in on or anybody did at the LPGA. Our focus was more on how the PGA of America was going to, you know, deal with the situation and how we can all move forward to continue to grow the game and not focus on any of the negativity that's associated with things like that.
Another good thing you guys announced a week or so ago, local girl from up here, Carolyn Powers, you had her on the Golf Channel talking about the partnership with the Legends Tour and the Sumatra Tour for the Chico's Patty Bird Memorial in May in Fort Myers. That has to be a favorite thing of yours to talk about.
It is. It's you know, as much as we talk about growing the game from the lower levels and trying to find the next stars, I think we need to celebrate even better the stars that paved the way for all those other players. You know, the Symetra Tour is a great thing for us, and we're growing it, and we're getting more and more players ready to come out and compete on the LPGA. But, you know, you never forget where you've come from, and you never forget those who've helped you get there. And the Legends Tour is built with a lot of players who've done some wonderful things for this tour. And just like on the PGA Tour, you know, when they're out there at the level just below the PGA Tour, you know, whether it was the Buy.com or the Nike Tour or the Web.com now, those players, they do have an opportunity to compete against some of the players being ready for the Champions Tour that have won out on the PGA Tour, that have had success. And I think you should have to compete against them. You can learn a lot as a mentor and, you know, try to find out how your game stacks up to somebody who's been there and done that. And I think the event that you're speaking of will give us an opportunity to have that, to have those legends continue to be a part of the game, to help grow the game. And I know they're all willing participants and willing ambassadors, and I think that's a real positive for us. It's a wonderful event.
Can't wait to see it. And we promised we wouldn't keep you here all day, so that kind of wraps up what I have. Carlos, do you have anything you'd like to ask Craig before we let him get on about his day?
Yeah, I'm just going to talk about, you know, Spain won the inaugural International Crown. Craig, what is your take on what happened this year and where you see the International Crown going?
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of that event. There's no question. Spain winning, I think, was really good for yet another country. Adahara and Beatriz and Belen and you know, that was a real positive for our tour to have all those players competing and playing that well. You know, Carlota Segonda is a player that a lot of people don't know that much about, but she's very talented, been on the Solheim Cup team. So if it wasn't going to be the United States from a who's having more fun out on the golf course standpoint, I don't think anybody had more fun that week than Team Spain, you know, from the music to the to the smiles on their faces, to the rah-rah on the first tee. I think that's a real good thing for us. But, you know, it's all come down to this, guys. I mean, we're celebrating a lot of different things this year. We're celebrating a lot of different things this week. And Stacey Lewis, we haven't discussed her, but she can become the first American since Beth Daniel in 94 to sweep Rolex Player of the Year, Vare Trophy, and the Money List. And that needs to be talked about. I mean, we talk a lot about, in men's golf, the stars being stars and playing great, but they don't always come up with every single trophy. And the dominance of Stacey and the chase from her and NB to try to be number one in the world and win the money title and all these things is just incredible. And we are very fortunate to have some of those storylines going on this week. So, as always, I really appreciate you guys covering us, talking about us. You've impressed me with how much you know about it. Either you're reading all of our communications information or you're really following us closely. So that's impressive.
No, we really follow the Open Game. We love it. And we want to thank you for taking some time off to be with us this week. We know you're very busy, and there's the CME Group Tour Championship now this week with the wrap-up of the season. So we would like to thank you and wish the best of luck for you and the LPGA Tour.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Craig. Have a good one this week.
Yep.
There you have it. That was Craig Cann, the Chief Communications Officer of the OpenGA. Fred, a lot of stuff that he covered there. I liked a lot of the comments, you know, about the amount of tournaments when you talk to him about if there would be a strain for the players and all that. And, you know, part of their big success, I think, that due to the great scheduling practices that they have is that week in and week out, the best players are present. And because of that, the product is always top-notch, you know. And also that makes the veterans and youngsters winning also make it more interesting, and it's a testament maybe about the longevity that the players have due to that schedule and practice. So, and another good point that I like that he talked about when you asked him about the Ted Bishop fiasco, his answers was great. I mean, as usual, great interview with Craig Foote.
Yeah, he is a professional in the strictest sense of the word. He knows his business, and he's very, very good at it. He was great for a long time on the Golf Channel, and he is really doing well with the LPGA Tour. And happened to come along with Michael Wan at a time when the tour is really growing, and it's just been a great deal for both of them. But yeah, you know, his points to the growth, the young girls coming up there. We have not seen, you know, we are amazed, you and I are amazed at all the young talent that's coming up and the teenagers winning all the time and the Lydia Kos and the Jutana Garns and, you know, all the, you know, it's just one after another. But there's more coming, Carlos. You know, the college ranks are filled the internationally, the Asians and Chinese and, you know, they're coming from all over the world. So, the LPGA Tour is really strong and growing, and you know, as we've said before, it's just one of the best products there is out there.
Yeah, this weekend and ladies European Tour, a Chinese teenager, another one, an 18-year-old, Ziyu Ling, won there on China on the ladies European Tour. So they keep coming. Hey, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we have the practice range, and we're going to talk about a name that you have to get used to hearing for a long time to come. That's Brooks Koepka. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now we're at the practice range, and we're going to be, our theme of the week is Brooks Koepka, his latest win there at the Turkish Airlines Open during the Race to Dubai Final Series. You know, there's a reason why Brooks Koepka is the best young American golfer you've never heard of.
and that it has to do less with his game than with his passport. Koepka and his compatriot and flatmate, Peter Uihlein, last year's European Tour Rookie of the Year, they have become trendsetters by leaving America to cut their professional teeth the many other sides of the ponds. Since joining the Pat ranks after the 2012 U.S. Open, Koepka, a 24-year-old Florida native, has teed up in 62 tournaments in 23 countries on 6 different tours. He has 52 pages of government stamps and almost as many adventures in the last 10 months while playing in 14 different countries. His season opening itinerary last year included India, South Africa, and Kenya. He has collected 5 wins already. 3 of them came early last year on the Challenge Tour, and that earned him an instant promotion to the European Tour. He was the only player to do that last year. And he led the rankings until the final week, even though he didn't play again on that tour. You know, his journey has been a very tough one. Last year, while on the Challenge Tour, he's a former Florida State All-American, and he had already won twice. But he was ready to pack it in at the Scottish Hydro Challenge. He was tired of living out of suitcases, not knowing what he was ordering for dinner because of language barriers. He wanted the comforts of West Palm Beach, Florida for a few days. Then enter his roommate, Peter Uihlein, a former Oklahoma State star, and his roommate, who had been there, done that, even at the tender age of 23. Uihlein also went to a Challenge Tour route after a failed attempt at the PGA Tour Q School. He also experienced the trials and tribulations of going it on his own without a support system there for him every day. He gave him an 11-hour golf counseling session via text messages that Saturday. He urged Koepka to stick it out, to power through the challenges in front of him. Whatever Uihlein said to Koepka that day, he earned his third Challenge Tour victory and an automatic graduation to the European Tour, where he then joined Uihlein. That conversation also took Koepka one step further, giving him the push he needed to qualify for the Open Championship, winning an international qualifier on Monday following his victory in Scotland, winning him a spot there in Muirfield in mid-July. Ultimately, his goal was to get inside the top 50 so he can pick and choose where he plays in the world, especially back in the U.S. on the PGA Tour. His win this past weekend moved him all the way up to 35 on the official World Golf rankings and now has an exemption on the European Tour until December of 2016. He can do all that he wanted now. He also feels that he has gained a distinctive advantage by choosing to play overseas, one that makes him feel confident heading everywhere he goes to play, most of all the ability to play in inclement weather. Koepka once said that the Americans can struggle with bad weather. There is wind and rain here and lightning will take you off course. Over there, there's no lightning, so you're playing through it all. He hated playing in rain jackets before, but he got used to it. He has said also that he's more like a complete player now. With the success achieved so far, even with the tough struggles, players are only as good as the expectation they put on themselves, and that's what Koepka has done. Fred, do we really see this as, this way to develop as a future trend, or were these cases like him and Peter Uihlein once in a blue moon? Why this hasn't happened before? Those are the questions that I would have.
Well, over the years, Carlos, there have been instances of guys that have gone to the European Tour or the Japanese Tour to play and earn their wings, so to speak. But it just doesn't happen often. You mentioned it. I mean, it's tough. You know, it's tough enough to travel and play golf around the United States when, you know, at least if you miss a cut or you've got a couple days off, you can slip home, you know, jump on a plane, slip home for a couple nights in your own bed before you fly back, say, on a Wednesday morning to get a practice round in before you start playing on Thursday. But when you're overseas someplace, I mean, you're there. You're not going to jump on a plane and fly 15 hours home or, you know, to spend, you know, 24 or 48 hours home and then turn around and fly 15 hours back somewhere. So, you know, you're just stuck. And just like you said about Koepka, you know, the food. I mean, you know, you're just not eating the same food that you're used to. It's a whole different culture. You know, you probably kill for a Big Mac or something, and it's got to wear on you when you're doing it for months at a time. So I know we see guys getting big checks, getting to play golf every day at all these exotic places, and we think it's great. But, you know, if you're doing it day in and day out, you know, for months on end, you just want to come home. You know, I can understand completely where he's coming from. And, you know, I really think if you want to become tour hardened and a real veteran, it's a great experience. What Uline and what Koepka are doing, have done, I think it's going to really serve them well over the next 7, 8, 9, 10 years. I think we're going to see these guys really contend in majors, contend in the big tournaments, because they are tournament hardened now. You know, Hogan, Snead, Nelson, those guys had to play. They had to win because that was their job, and they had to do it. They had to perform or they didn't eat. They couldn't buy gas for the car to get to the next tournament. So, and that's the same kind of thing that these guys were thrown in. They put themselves out there, and they had to win or else come home and get a job. So it's really a good learning, curve, a good way to start, but it's tough, man. It's a lot harder than playing on the web.com. The one good thing about going to Europe is that the purses are probably, what, three times or four times what they are on the web.com. The web.com tournament purses are, what, $600,000? The four playoff events at the end are a million, but the average tournament during the year is only about 600,000 with, you know, what, 100,000 or so going to the winner. So they're not getting rich out there. They're barely making expenses, if that. You know, their sponsors hopefully are paying them enough to cover their expenses, and that's just about it. Over in Europe, you know, if you win a tournament, you know, they're $1 million, $2 million tournaments, $3 million tournaments. So, you know, the winner's getting $200,000-$300,000. Now that's a lot less than the million or $900,000 that the guys are getting here in the U.S. on the PGA Tour. But you do have a chance to win a little more money over there. But your costs are more because you're constantly on the road. So, you know, it's a business just like any other business. You have to weigh the good with the bad, the cost with the incomes and the revenues. And they've chosen to do that. It's worked out well for them. I don't know if a lot of kids could do it, especially a young kid, 22, 23, 24 years old. They have to have a good support system someplace. And it's a hard road, Carlos, but it really worked for them. And I think it's really going to work out for Koepka. I think we're going to see a lot of him going forward.
I truly do think so. I mean, you know, he has the game and the confidence to make it out here in the PGA Tour, and to take a line from our friend Ryan Ballinger, you know, with his win on Sunday, he made it clear that he intends to leave his own stamp on the sport. Hey, we only have a minute left. We did it all here. Like we talked before that we started the show, I think we're not going to have enough time for all the things that we have. So we're going to have to wrap it up, Back Niners. That wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always a pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf, and thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, the very good friend of the show, Craig King, Chief Communications Officer for the LPGA. Always a pleasure to have his very insightful and entertaining interviews. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also to tune in or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at @Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.